So you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the news.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable, Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher with you here. No, just kidding. Les Thatcher is under the weather today, and Les is not going to be on the show today. I know it's sad, but that's the way things go. Before we do start the show, though, I do want to say a very belated happy birthday to my good friend. That's right, Les Thatcher. Les turned the old 65 the other day, but don't tell anybody about that. I want to thank everybody for hanging on for this abbreviated edition of Wrestling Weekly. We are going to introduce our special co-host for the night. You know him from the Voice of Wrestling. It's Chris Chisholm. Chris, thanks for being on Wrestling Weekly.
Thanks for having me, man.
We've got, there's been a lot of news this week, hasn't there?
Yeah, and I've got big shoes to fill with Les Thatcher gone, so I'll do my best. But, you know, there has been a couple of things come up, so I'll let you get to them.
Sure, go ahead. No, bring it on.
No, yeah, there's a couple of things that have caught my eye, obviously. Everybody talking about Jerry Jarrett going to meet with TNA.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess, Doc, I've been thinking about this situation. I don't know if it has come out yet, because the one thing that would really make this a very interesting story is if he still has even a minority, a share in the company, even a small share. Has it come out for fact whether he does or not?
I don't know as for a fact or not.
And I've seen people say, you know, one way or the other, okay, he has a small share, he doesn't. Now, the fact that Jerry Jarrett is not happy in TNA, well, that's a given. You know, he's not happy with the position, and of course, if you don't know what Jerry Jarrett's doing there, I mean, he's really been reduced to the gorilla position every, you know, at the live shows.
All right.
He sits up there by the entranceway, you know, and, like, directs people to go in or out. You know, that's all he does. So he's not very satisfied. He's not very happy, and that's something that's been ongoing for a while, ever since Panda, you know, Entertainment came in and stepped there, you know, well, shit, they're paying. So it makes sense that they would step in. They want to know where their money's going, and they've kind of taken more of a handle on that company. So he's not very happy, but I don't know if he shares, you know, a stock or a portion of that company. If he does, then this really gets interesting. If he doesn't, then okay, well, there's not really much he can do. Even if he leaves, there's not much that he can do to hurt TNA by leaving. If he sells his portion of that company to WWE, then you're just, now you're getting really, really interesting. So.
I thought the whole thing about him going to WWE was to push this one guy that he wanted them to work with.
Well, that was part of it. Mm-hmm. I think that was his way in, honestly. But come on, you know there has to be some other ulterior motive here.
Because
why would he not push it to TNA? Why would he not want that guy to be a part of TNA?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I mean,
that's why I think there has to be, that was his way in, I would think. Of course, I don't know why. I mean, his way in could have just been himself, easily.
Right.
But at the same time, I think that it was a way in. I don't know. But nevertheless, I don't think that it makes much sense for him to go push this guy that he could easily push in TNA. If he had that much, you know, belief in him, whatever the case may be, if he really had that much belief in TNA anymore, if he really wanted to help and support TNA, then I think that that would have been the obvious choice. But instead, he goes to WWE and has a meeting with them, and now, you know, all these rumors are stirring.
It's crazy.
One thing that I will say, too, though, about the Memphis Collection, a lot of people talking about the Memphis Collection, what I have read and heard is that he does not. He shared his part of that to Jerry Lawler a long time ago.
Right.
So he does not hold. So as far as selling the Memphis tapes collection or the Memphis company, anything like that to Vince McMahon, his portion of that, he does not have a share in that anymore.
Right. A lot of people thought that was, you know, a lot of people start those rumors when somebody like that goes to visit them because lately, you know, they have been buying all the collections.
So, nevertheless, as far as Jerry, even if he did jump ship, the only way that it could affect TNA is if he still holds a portion of that company and he sells it to Vince McMahon.
Mm-hmm.
If that would make things very interesting. Now, it's probably still a very small number, a very small percentage of what he holds in that company, I would imagine. But even if it is a small percentage, I mean, WWE, you know, still has their hand on TNA. You know, so it's really an interesting situation. And I knew that Jerry Jarrett was not satisfied, not content with what he's doing there, but I never really thought that it was this bad or that it would be taken this far.
Yeah.
You know, and come on, you know, he's not innocent here. You don't go to WWE to push anybody. You know, you don't go and have a meeting with Vince McMahon unless there's got to be a reason, and it can't be to push this Russian guy, despite how good he may or may not be. So I don't know. I'm really, really wanting to see how this unfolds.
Yeah, you're really into these conspiracy theories, man.
You know, I analyze things, and I think why would he want to go to Vince McMahon, the competition, and put over a guy when he has TNA who's looking for big men, looking for talent? Why would he not just go to TNA and say, look, let's use this guy? I mean,
maybe he couldn't afford to pay him what he wanted.
Well, I don't
know. Who knows?
I don't know, but nevertheless, I think that there could be an ulterior motive. I think Jerry Jarrett's unhappy, and maybe I hate to think that maybe he just wants to like shove it in the face of TNA, but maybe it's that extreme. Maybe that's the case, and I hope it does, because that's when wrestling starts getting interesting. You know, because you're like, wow, the competition is now, you know, WWE's part owner of the competition. So it would really make things a little hairy there.
I would hate that if that happened.
I would too. TNA has got so much stuff going great for them right now. They just had a .9 on their fourth show. They've stayed consistent
right
at .8 the first three shows, bam, up to a .9. That means they are keeping interest from all the people that are tuning into their show. And in fact, they are growing. So that's a big deal. This Thursday is the telltale sign here. This Thursday, their primetime special is a big deal. It is a big factor of whether this thing is going to really succeed or not. Because, I mean, from what people are saying, if it can score what the UFC scored in the primetime slot they had, which is like a 1.4, if it gets a 1.4 or better, there's a very big possibility that Spike TV might invest in putting a block on Monday night between, you know, TNA and UFC to go head-to-head
right
with WWE. Now, I don't necessarily think that's a great idea. I don't think at this point TNA or Spike TV needs to try to make wrestling fans choose one or the other, because as much as I hate to admit it, every wrestling fan is going to, well, not every wrestling fan, but the majority of wrestling fans are every time going to choose WWE over TNA at this point.
Yeah.
So they need to capitalize on being a part of a Monday night block, but they need to come on right before or right after, but I would prefer right before WWE, when wrestling fans are changing, give them the ability to watch both, but do not make them choose.
I think before is too early. I think it would be better if it came on right
after. Even if it did, I wouldn't mind that either, one way or the other. They need to do it right before or right after, but they don't need to go head-to-head at this point.
Right.
So, but they got that going for them. That's a big deal. They've been doing very, very well. In addition to that, they've got the video game deal. The video game deal could easily make back 75% of what they've already lost up to this point. The $20 million, $25 million they're in the hole,
mm-hmm.
they haven't gained back. This one video deal, despite the fact that it's going to, you know, give exposure to this product, this video game deal could easily make them $20 million.
If it's a good video game.
If it's a decent video game. If it's a bad video game, it's still going to be profitable. But if it's a very good video game, then yes, they need to put some time and effort into this video game, because if it's good,
definitely,
it's a wrestling video game, it's going to sell, they're going to get names out there and stuff like that. It's going to be great exposure, and it's going to make them money, and that's a big deal.
Absolutely.
TNA really doing good things right now.
Definitely, definitely. We're going to take a quick break, guys. We got to get to our first guest. We'll try to get some more news in there later. Got an abbreviated show tonight, so we got to do everything, You know,
we got to talk about Sting, Doc.
On the ball. We will
Sting.
Talk about Sting later.
Just real quickly, Sting. Not now, but yeah, we got to talk about Sting.
We will. We will. We'll get some time in there and we'll take care of that. Let's take a break right now, and when we come back, we've got from Ring of Honor and Full Impact Pro, it's Dave Prazak. He's the man behind the mic, and he's going to be behind the mic on our show right when we come back. Stick around. It's Chris Chisholm and Doc Young here on Wrestling Weekly. Doc Young and Chris Cash back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Ah, I like this music, Chris. You can't hear it right now, but I'm jamming.
I love it too, buddy. I love it. Great music there that I can't hear.
Don't forget, we've got Terry Funk coming up later in the show. He's the Funker returns to Wrestling Weekly. And right now, it's from Ring of Honor and Full Impact Pro. Like I said, the man behind the mic, it's Dave Prazak on the line. Dave, thanks for being on Wrestling Weekly.
Oh, it's awesome to be the undercard for Terry Funk tonight.
You're the opening match there tonight.
And I'm the undercard for Les Thatcher, so we're in the same boat.
There you go.
How you been doing, Dave?
I've been doing really good lately. There hasn't been a time that I've been happier to be in the wrestling business than I would say the past 5 months or so.
Well, didn't it go from one extreme to the other, though? I mean, you're pretty nice.
To an extent. I made the decision to leave IWA Mid-South during early August, I believe it was. I think it was at the very end of July, early August.
Something like that.
And it was for various reasons. I just wasn't looking forward to going to the shows and working the shows anymore. When you get to the point that it's not fun, you need to make a change. And just several circumstances caused me to make the decision to stick with what I was looking forward to going to. And I've been having a lot of fun at ROH and FIP down in Florida. And I figure I'd rather keep liking what I'm doing than start hating it. And so I made the decision to move on. But IWA Mid-South was a tremendous learning experience for me. I worked there for 8 years, and I had some great opportunities thanks to Ian Rotten and everybody at IWA, and really learned my craft as a play-by-play announcer from the fact that we did upwards of 50, 55 live events every year, and we did the commentary live to tape. So I really had the opportunity to learn. What I'm doing as a play-by-play commentator, thanks to IWA, but I made the decision that it's best for me to move on to other things.
When you first started out commentating in IWA, were you as bad as I was the first time I did ring announcing for IWA?
I was horrible when I first started ring announcing. The first show I ever did was the first annual Eddie Gilbert Memorial Show that Dennis Corluzzo promoted in New Jersey, and that's kind of a big independent show to have as your debut because, you know, the place was packed. Everybody had their eyes on that show. Dory Funk Jr. was there, Jim Cornette, Al Snow, you know, Doug Gilbert was on the show. It was packed with talent, and it was an interesting way to get my feet wet. And if I go back and watch that tape now, I had no clue what I was doing. So
that's good.
Yeah, you got to get used to it.
Was the guy on commentary like making fun of you the whole time?
Actually, I don't think they even had commentary
guy on tape. I got to tell you, Chris, I did the ring announcing for IWA once. And here's Dave Prazak on commentary when I watch the tape. Oh, he's new. It's okay.
I understand the position that you were in on that night, so I didn't hold it against you.
I got really nervous at the beginning of the show. I don't know why. I'm usually not a nervous person, but all the eyes were staring at me, and I was just like, whatever I say, they're going to hear it. That's all I kept thinking. Whatever I say, they're going to hear it. And
well, I admit I admire anybody that does the commentary or even ringing. No, okay, not ring announcing, man. That should be simple. But commentary is different. I mean, if you're me or if you're any wrestling fan that has an interest at all in talking and things like that, I mean, everybody's done it. I would imagine you turn down the volume and you try. That's tough. That is very tough. I even embarrass myself.
You tuck promos in front of your mirror? Yeah.
Yeah, I embarrass myself when I do that. So I definitely envy anybody that can do that effectively. But nevertheless, it's not me, you know. So anyway, I actually am very interested to hear about this new thing. I remember you talking about it a while back with the website Shimmer.
Yes, Shimmer Athletes, and the name itself should be the first clue as to what direction we're going with the whole concept. Rather than just calling it Women's Pro Wrestling or anything like that, we decided women athletes would be the best bet, because from the, right off the bat, when you hear the name, you know that it's going to be stressing the athletic side of things, and it's not going to be either based heavily on gimmicks, like in the past a GLOW or a Women of Wrestling or a Crush was focused on, and it's not based on the, I guess you could say, TNA side of things, where it's the actual talent of the wrestlers involved that is going to be the basis of what we're trying to do.
So it's not going to be Boobs or Us?
No. I mean, it's not to say that everybody's ugly on the show.
And they actually do all have boobs.
Yes, they all do have, yeah.
Now, let me ask you this, though, out of curiosity, because I know there's a lot of promoters out there, and despite how shady they clearly are, you know, anybody that, a lot of promoters that put women's wrestling on their card without much thought even, I mean, they are obviously guilty of just wanting to hang out with the chicks.
Yeah,
I mean, is this something that, you know, I mean, is that one reason why you decided to go this route as opposed to promoting a typical promotion? I mean, you know, you get to be around a lot of hot girls, man.
Well, what it came down to, I've always been a big fan of women's wrestling, particularly like early 90s to mid 90s All Japan women, just because they were so athletic, so gifted, that I always looked forward to getting the tapes. And I always thought to myself, why hasn't anyone in the United States really tried to promote women's wrestling in that way? And why is everything more based on, you know, wild characters? Or, you know, I mean, everybody saw what the GLOW product was like. It was more of a gigantic cartoon than an actual wrestling promotion. And despite what some people might say, there are a lot of talented female wrestlers in North America that just need the opportunity to show what they can do on a large scale and to work on shows with other talented women. And I want to be able to give the talented wrestlers an opportunity to learn from one another through wrestling on the same show with each other. I've got 18 women booked for the debut taping on November 6th in Berwyn, Illinois, just outside Chicago. And the plan is to use anywhere from 18 to 20 for each taping that we do. I'm calling it tapings because we're shooting two DVDs in one shot that night, and the plan would be to continue to do something like that in the future. A big reason why I think a lot of the female wrestlers in the United States don't really progress to the next level is because of living in different parts of the country, and more often than not, let's say you have an independent promotion in Chicago. Actually, we'll say Minnesota, St. Paul, Minnesota. You're going to have a handful of different wrestlers that are going to appear on all of the indie shows in that area, and they're always going to be working each other. It's going to be the same four or five women that are wrestling each other no matter what the card is. So you get to the point where it's like, how can they learn or improve when they're always wrestling the same person? You can get a lot of practice to do the same match with the same four people, you know, and just alternate every few weeks who you're working, but you're not going to really learn unless you get the opportunity to wrestle someone from California or someone who's had experience on the East Coast or someone from, you know, the Mid-South area. Mm-hmm. You've got to be able to take all the top talent, put them in one place, and have them work with each other so that they can all improve and learn together. And that's one of the main goals that I have with the Shimmer Project.
What's the roster looking like?
I mean, I've got a variety of talent from around the country. From out in California, we've got Sarah Del Rey, who has spent time training at the Inoki Dojo in Santa Monica. She spent most of 2005 wrestling in Japan during the dying days of All Japan Women and for A to Z as well. Cheerleader Melissa from APW out in California, who has also been going to Japan for Marika Yoshida's M-Style earlier this year. And you know, we got people from the East Coast. We have Ariel, Cindy Rogers, Lacey, Allison Danger, you know, from the New England area, Nikki Rocks. From down in Tennessee, we've got Christy Ricci.
Daisy
Hayes.
Daisy.
I mean, we are based in the Midwest, so it's like all the talent that the Chicago area fans have been used to seeing either on IWA shows or NWA Midwest shows or what have you, like Daisy Hayes, Mischief.
I love Daisy Hayes.
Of course, Rain from Minnesota. I use Minnesota as an example. And
yeah.
She's one half of the Minnesota home wrecking crew with Lacey. But we've got a good selection of talent from around the country, and I'm hoping to put – and, of course, Canada as well. can't forget Chantel Taylor and Tiana Ringer, two really promising athletes from Ontario.
Let me ask you, though, even though you're somewhat hopeful, which of course you are, and I've always been a big fan as well as far as the women wrestling. I wish they could do more. I liked WWE's women's wrestling a year ago or over a year ago when they actually seemed to add a little credibility to it. But, you know, there's a reason why they go in the direction they're going now, because as hard as it is to admit, it seems like it draws, and it seems like it sells more than trying to put over women as actual athletes. Is there a realistic side of you, Dave, that might be a little concerned with what's going to actually draw?
Not really, because I think that if you're a wrestling fan, whether it's a male or a female in the ring, if you're seeing a quality match, you're going to appreciate that it's a good match, and whether it's a male or a female. And the thing is, yeah, maybe the Diva Search aspect might draw ratings and get interest from the audience, but why can't you have beautiful-looking women that can actually work on TV, you know, instead? You know, Holly is a fantastic wrestler.
Yeah.
And the fact that she almost was pushed to the side in favor of giving contracts to women who basically won a modeling contest.
Right.
I mean, they have no experience wrestling whatsoever. I don't see the logic in giving contracts, wrestling contracts, to people that aren't even wrestlers.
Sure.
When
Absolutely. There
are talented, I mean, there's no real reason why a Daisy Hayes doesn't have a deal, you know? Up until...
Well, besides the fact that you can sneeze and blow her over.
Well, yeah, but she's, even though she's a very small competitor, she packs a good punch. She's a solid, solid wrestler. But, I mean, like, for an example, up until last week, Beth Phoenix was working down in OVW ever since early 2003. She relocated to Louisville to try to get a job with the WWE, and she didn't even have a developmental contract until a week ago. And she was finally able to get what she set out to do. You know, it paid off. She was able to get a contract, and she'll be... So, I mean, slowly but surely, it seems like they are bringing in a couple, you know, a couple decent wrestlers. You know, Mickie James brought up to TV a couple of weeks ago. So they are trying to add some wrestling aspects to their women's division. But as much as the TNA thing might sell, I think that because of the fact that no one's given a real shot at marketing a solid wrestling-based women's product in the United States, it's something that needs to be at least attempted. If it fails, it fails. If it doesn't, then it's going to be a good thing for all the women involved, and it'll be a good thing for the fans.
And you can always go back to G.I. Ho later, right? You can always try to import her at a later date if it doesn't work out. But let me ask you this, because looking at your roster here, I do wonder, though, and I don't know if it's just despite, I mean, why the selection, what went into the selection of this talent, and where are some of the women? I mean, we've been talking about Daisy Hayes. I know Daisy Hayes. I've heard of her. I've seen her work, and a lot of us have, but a lot of us, the majority of wrestling fans, even those probably on the Internet, have not heard maybe of a Daisy Hayes and some of these women that you are. Where are the maybe April Hunter, maybe Gail Kim, Trinity, Molly Holly? I can understand that you probably wanted her maybe, but she's not wrestling at the moment, so I can understand why she probably wouldn't work, but at this time. But where are some of these others? Is there a reason that you're not using them opposed to some of these others that you are?
Not necessarily. I would say that, like, the 18 that we've got on the first taping is just for our first show. These were the 18 that I think we could make the best impact with at first.
Mm.
And you never know who might be used in the future. It's not going to be, these are the only 18 we're ever going to use. I mean,
right.
It is going to vary. For the second taping, we'll have some other talent in as well. As far as, like, Gail Kim goes, you'll notice that I do have 18 talented female wrestlers, but none of them are costing me an arm and a leg. That's not to say that Gail Kim's charging an arm and a leg either, but I think that...
Well, she is, so I guess I
mean, she probably is, and she can get away with doing that because, you know, she's had national television exposure and whatnot. But I didn't want to spend too much money on bringing in big
one
stars
name,
that
right.
have been off TV right away. And additionally, the big reason why we're doing this as tapings and shooting two DVDs in one night is to produce a DVD product that is where we're looking to try to make our money back on this whole project is through the DVD sales. Working for Full Impact Pro in Florida was one of the main inspirations for even attempting the Shimmer Project. was because at first they were running, it seemed like Memphis TV, where there was like a little studio audience of about 40 or 50 people at the early FIP shows in Florida, but they had some tremendous talent. So if you watch those DVDs, like the early FIP stuff from late last year and early 2005, there's a small crowd, but the actual quality, the content of the matches was amazing. And the DVDs are selling really well, and they've been able to build up to drawing 250, 300 people to the live shows now as well. And I figure if nothing else, even if we might not have support to have huge live crowds at these shows, at least we can produce a DVD product, and I think Ring of Honor is going to do tremendous things in terms of distributing the DVDs to an audience that appreciates good wrestling and would probably be able to appreciate what we're trying to do more so than just your casual wrestling fan could.
Uh-huh. Bodick has a question in the chat room. He wants to know what titles are going to be in Shimmer.
We haven't made an official decision yet about that, but what I'm leaning toward is
World Heavyweight.
Not having any titles at all. Because the thing is, we don't want to build everything around one individual. I'd rather make the entire roster and everyone that's involved the focus.
So will this not be very storyline driven then? It's kind of tough if you don't have something
we'll
to...
Still, I mean, it's still going to be, it'll be a traditional American wrestling product, you know. Mm. You know, it'll be like what you'd see anywhere else in the United States.
Right.
It's just, I guess maybe you could compare it to Chikara, where they don't necessarily have a Chikara heavyweight champion. Every once in a while, you know, they'll do yearly tournaments. I would be open to the idea of doing something along those lines down the line. But I don't really have plans on having a champion at first.
Well, then in theory, what are they working for?
They're working to make more money. The winners of the match get paid more.
Okay, that's a good.
You know, and working to show that they can work to main event status on the DVDs, you know, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. I, like I said, we might do like a yearly tournament.
Rubber Duck in the chat room, he says, are you hiring or in need of volunteers?
Not necessarily. We have a lot
he just wants to, like, wax them up or something before they go out.
Yeah.
No, you pervert. No, I actually do. I know it's tough to, I mean, you have to stay grounded going into a new promotion, but, I mean, have you thought about the future? Where would you like Shimmer to go? What do you see for the company, you know, down the road?
Well, I would hope that we could produce a regular DVD product where we're doing tapings, you know, once every 2 or 3 months,
right.
So that we can have a continuous DVD series. We're not giving the shows titles. We're just going with Volume 1, Volume 2, Volume 3, Volume 4, just to do a DVD series. And Ring of Honor has given us their full support in, like, publicizing the live shows and is going to be pushing the DVDs, much like they do for FIP in Florida. Ring of Honor is going to be heavily behind this. I know that ROH has done a few women's matches in the past, but it seems like their core audience isn't necessarily in favor of doing it regularly. So I can see why they don't want to regularly have women's matches on their shows. But this is a way that they can push women's wrestling in the United States to their audience, but not necessarily put them on actual ROH shows.
Mm-hmm. TNA fan wants to know if Ring of Honor is going to be used or have co-promoted shows with Shimmer.
Not necessarily co-promote. I mean, we have no plans to actually do a Shimmer ROH combined show or anything along those lines. But like the first taping is the day after Ring of Honor's in Chicago Ridge. They're in Chicago Ridge on November 5th. We are 10 miles away from the Chicago Ridge building on November 6th to do our taping. So it's sort of like a doubleheader, you know, on two consecutive nights, so that fans in the Chicago area can check out two shows in one weekend.
It sounds good, Dave. That's shimmerwrestling.com if you want to check that out.
A lot of hot girls.
A lot of hot girls.
A lot of talented women.
Yes.
Dave, are you, I mean, just be honest, are you just really just like looking for a girlfriend?
No.
All right.
Some of my closest friends in the wrestling business for the past 6 years have been female wrestlers, and I've always wanted to see them get an opportunity to show on a grand scale what they're capable of in
all
the
right.
United States.
As long as it's not like the Wrestling Bachelor starring Dave Prazak or something.
Nothing wrong. I'm not David McClain.
So. All right,
Dave, I want to thank you for being on the show, and we'll look forward to Shimmer next
Yeah, good luck with that.
Next Sunday, November 6th, in Berwyn, Illinois.
All right, thanks, guys.
Bye,
see
Dave.
You, man.
All right, that's Dave Prazak from Ring of Honor here on Wrestling Weekly. Chris?
Yeah.
You wanted to get into some news before we moved on.
Before the funker?
Before the funker.
Yeah.
You wanted to get into some news.
Well, I just, I want to talk about the possibility of Sting showing up on Raw. Quite frankly, I don't believe it's going to happen.
I don't either.
I definitely do not think that it's going to happen because of what I have heard from, you know, about Sting and what I know of Sting. You know, he is not interested, I would imagine, at this point. There was a time where he was. I'd be shocked to think that he's back at that point right now with everything that he's got going. But a lot of people also don't realize how close he was to showing up a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, they just, lawyers get in there and they could work something out. And maybe just he wanted more money than they wanted to give him. That type of thing is what kept him from showing up. But he was never opposed. So despite what a lot of people, especially at the beginning, after WCW closed and everybody said, oh, Sting won't sell out because he has no interest in going. Well, that might have been the case right at first, but a year into that or so, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, that he really was very close to showing up on WWE television, and it just fell through at last moment.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not opposed to working for that company, and everybody always wants one last shot. There's not a question, but at this point in time, Sting has to realize, probably just as much as anybody that has some name recognition and credibility in this business, that it's a 50-50 chance, maybe even worse, that WWE is going to even use you properly and give you the good opportunity to go out the way you really intend on going out, you know, going into that.
Yeah.
So I don't think that he's interested, but having said all that, I would love it. I would love every minute of it. And one thing that I've said to TNA, if Sting would like to work, TNA's the TNA has not done it, and I'm not saying they haven't, but if TNA has not went out of their way to get Sting on board, especially before they went after someone like Kevin Nash, not go and throw whatever they could possibly think was worth it at Sting to try to get him on board to help carry that company mainstream, then shame on TNA. Because
right.
Sting has something going for him that nobody else has, and it's exactly what we're talking about. He has not shown up on WWE television, and they need to capitalize off that because he still has a name. People would still love to see him, and I've always been a big fan of Sting, and I seriously think that he could help any company. But TNA needs him more than WWE does. TNA should and would hopefully use him the way that he would need to be used. And that's the thing that I think about. But, you know, despite that, I would still love to see him on Raw every week. You know, it would be interesting if he wrestled some matches with Shelton Benjamin and stuff. You know, that type of stuff would be really interesting to see. But, you know, I hate to be the pessimist here. I just don't see it happening.
I have to agree with you on that one. It would be great, but I don't think we're going to see it happening. And I don't know who owned that website that, you know, was supposed to be the official Sting website that put that up there. But it's not there anymore.
Well, that's supposedly, I mean, it is supposedly his official website. I don't know that they are saying that maybe what happened was somebody had access, put that up there, and then the actual webmasters took it down when they noticed it. That seems a little far-fetched.
Yeah.
But, you know, despite that, it really is, from all accounts, I guess, I mean, we haven't been told otherwise, it really is his official website. But, again, you know, they might have been doing it just to get the rumor started and stuff, you know, and now they're backing out of it. Because if that were the case, WWE would not allow Sting to even put that on his website. They would tell him, you know, straight up, you know, first thing, don't get this out there. We don't want them to know.
Right.
If they wanted people to know, they'd be doing it on WWE.com.
Exactly.
So I would be very shocked if he showed up on Raw tomorrow night, but you know it's definitely not out of the realm of possibility. So if you want to hold your breath, you can do that. And I would hope that I would really hope you're still alive after Raw tomorrow, because I'd love to see him back too. But I just, you know, gut instinct says that there's no truth to
yeah.
it at all.
Good point, Chris.
So
we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, yes, it's the King of Hardcore, Terry Funk, is gonna be on Wrestling Weekly. You're listening to Doc Young and Chris Cash here on Wrestling Weekly. We are going to take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this.
Wrestling Weekly will return to all the fun right after this.
What are you doing? You having fun?
I'm having a blast.
Ah. Ah.
Doc Young and Chris Cash back with you here at Wrestling Weekly. On the line, wow, we haven't had him on since May. It's the return of the Funker, Terry Funk, on Wrestling Weekly. Terry, thanks for being on the show tonight.
Well, all right. It's a pleasure being here, Doc. It really is, and, with you and Chris both.
It really has been a long time. We haven't... last time we spoke about the book coming out, and we spoke about, of course, Wrestle Reunion in August. And how was Wrestle Reunion?
It went extremely well and did very well, you know. And we're going back up there November the 5th at Philly this, you know, this weekend, you know, and going to be up there. And I'm going to be with Sabu against the Dudleys up there. Ought to be an interesting night.
Awesome, awesome. You turned on your old buddy Mick Foley at that show.
Yeah, well, hell, I need to turn on Mick Foley. Who said he was my buddy anyhow?
It was about
He's
time.
My self-proclaimed buddy.
It was about time.
I read it somewhere in a book.
Yeah, right.
No, I really did enjoy your book. It's called It's called More Than Hardcore, and it's really one of the better books out there.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I appreciate you lying on the air. You know, lying for me. I know that you try to stay pretty truthful, and then you come up here and say that stuff for me. I really appreciate that. You know, I was sitting here, and I was writing down stuff I wanted to tell you, you know, like November the 5th, I'm going to be in Philly, November the 11th and 12th, St. Louis and Eldon and for Harley Race, and November the 19th, I'm going to be in Spartanburg. For Tony Hunter, and November the 18th, I'm going to be facing off with the Fat Man down there for a personal interview. And December the 3rd, I'll be in Myrtle Beach. And December the 17th, I'm going to be in Lenore. And, you know, I just got to thinking, you know, it sounds like I'm damn selling snake oil.
Right, so we're glad you're not going to say all that.
I'm serious, but I went ahead and I thought, geez,
we're glad you decided to stay away from that.
Go ahead and forget all of these plugs and
right.
Buy the book and remember my www.terryfunk.net if you want to go ahead and get a hold of my website. You know, and I thought, geez, what a bunch of ridiculous stuff. Here I am. You know, I'm supposed to be getting out of the business. It feels like I'm selling snake oil or, you know, where you can either drink it or rub it on or do whatever.
It's like, come see Terry. Come
I know
see
it. That's
Terry.
Right. Yeah, forget about it. So I decided, geez, that's it. See, so I got in all of my crap right there, and you don't have to put up with anymore. We can talk about whatever you want to, except, oh, I forgot one other thing. Terry Funk, Box 118, Canyon, Texas, 79015. If
wow.
You want an autograph booked, okay, that's all over with. We can spend the rest of the show just talking bullshit.
You've got more going Excellent. On than these 25-year-olds out there.
Excellent. Yeah.
You're still so active. It's phenomenal.
Still so active. Well, yeah. If you watched my last match, maybe you wouldn't be sad.
So I heard you're selling the ranch. Is that true?
You bet. Gonna sell it eventually, you know, hope to. You know, it's a funny thing. It's a great, beautiful ranch. And but whenever you're dealing with ranches, it's not like dealing with selling a house in this day and age.
Right.
It's you got to find the right customer, the right person that wants to buy the darn thing, you know, and it's a beautiful place, but it's a great deal of work. You know, we're talking about a half section, you know, and a half section, as to define it to some of you people that don't know what a half section is, it's a half mile in all four directions, half mile on east side, half mile on the west side, half mile on the north side, south side. So it's a pretty good size. It's not a huge ranch, but it consumes a great deal of your time. And my wife and I, you know, as the kids are gone, and dadgummit, those cows aren't too much fun, you know, when you're breaking ice in the wintertime, you know, it's really not.
Right.
Do you expect a wrestling fan to buy your ranch?
Not at all.
I could see that happening. I mean, I would put up
if
money
really,
just to live in the place
well,
that Terry did.
I thought about, you know, I really don't think so, you know, and the reason why is that you have to have, you know, it's in a certain location, so therefore you exclude everybody. As far as being a wrestling fan, I think there's a great possibility of a wrestling fan buying my place, you know what I mean, that likes wrestling, just a person that likes wrestling, yeah, but for that being the reason I'm buying it, it would be absolutely absurd on their part. It's a money making producing ranch.
Yeah, they're gonna be sniffing your carpet and stuff, you know that, right?
Well, I don't know.
I wanna get to some questions in the chat room. EL, he said he wants to know if you were approached to be a one night stand.
That was with Vince?
Yes.
Yeah, that was they sent me a deal for $7,500. I'm just being straight up front and everything else to participate in it, and that's what they were going to pay me, and I had already set up with the deal with ECW for a lot less money, and not ECW, but Shane at that time, and I chose that one for a reason. I mean, I could have done them both, but physically at my stage in life, is I can do those matches and stuff. I can make it, a couple times a month, but to do two on a weekend, and perform to what the fans want me to or expect from me, it would have been difficult. So I had to cancel one of them, and I canceled the one with Vince because I took the one that was near and dear to my heart.
Which, by the way, if you haven't seen Forever Hardcore, I think it was even on the Hardcore Homecoming DVD as well. I mean, the music in the background added that special, really to the heart touch. But that was an awesome piece.
As you're sitting there talking about it, and that's so crazy, is that I don't watch a lot of things that I'm on, and I have no intention to. And that sounds rather silly, but I have after the interview, I was happy with what I said, and after my match, I was happy with my match. And believe me, it's hard for me to watch myself at this stage in my career, and that's not it's not meant bad or anything. It's I just don't I like to presume I'm doing well.
Yeah.
Now, if that makes any sense, I don't know, but
I understand what you mean completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Agent Orange wants to know, would you accept being honored in the WWE Hall of Fame?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Vince,
I would love to be.
I would
thoroughly love to be honored by them. It would be an honor to me to be honored by them. I'm not. I go ahead and I tell people what I think about Vince, and I tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is because I found that, in this day and age, is if you really tell the truth, is you do business. The fans appreciate that in this day and age, I try to be truthful whenever I discuss the WWE, and it's not always nice what I have to say about them, but it's not always bad either.
Right.
Terry, something that I've always liked to ask those that were heavily involved in ECW and things like that, and I'd love to have your take on it, is when people think about the man behind ECW, Paul Heyman is typically the people that are the person that someone will spout up. And a lot of people, just depending on your relationship with a Paul Heyman compared to your relationship with a Todd Gordon, some will say that Paul Heyman deserves every bit of the credit that he is given, and then others think that he's slightly overrated and that Todd Gordon is not given enough credit. What were your relationships like with both of them, and who do you give more credit to the success that ECW had?
Both of them were good. Both of them had faults. Todd is, and don't mean this badly, is I think that Todd saw ECW as something else that Paul Heyman saw in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really truthfully think there would not have been an ECW if Todd Gordon didn't originate it, Eastern Championship Wrestling.
All right.
And the Extreme Championship Wrestling was just an afterthought, But, I mean, it wasn't an afterthought, but it was the thought following the the ECW logo.
Right.
And Todd went out, and it would have never been there if that vehicle wouldn't have been there for Paul Heyman to jump on. It would have never happened.
Right.
It would have never been an ECW. And as far as Paul Heyman goes, there would not have been an ECW without Paul. And I truly believe that Paul E. was very, very instrumental in the creation of ECW, and he was very, very instrumental in the destruction of ECW, not because of some of the things that happened financial and some of the roads and routes he took. Now, I'm telling you that this guy was a really sharp guy as far as manipulation and doing things, but I'm telling you he made a lot of business mistakes. And so, Paul, who was it? Who was the one that was responsible for the demise? I would have to say it was Paul in his own way. And I think Paul would say that himself this day and age. I might be wrong.
Well, you know, one of the other things that
he says. Battling Paul there, Paul Heyman. And, yeah. But I'll tell you what, is it wouldn't have taken place and reached the status that it did without Paul. But nor would it be, you know, and again, as I say this, ECW was Paul Heyman. But ECW was also Terry Funk, Sabu,
yep.
Rob Van Dam, on and on and on and on and on of the guys that went up there and busted their ass up there and helped with the thing. Mm-hmm. And from the jobbers to the good guys, because they realized we all had to have a stage. And that was it.
One of the things that Paul did say, though, that he just recently said, actually, was that if they would have had the financial backing that a WCW did, or maybe that a TNA does now, if ECW would have had that financial backing, they'd still be around. Do you believe in that, or do you think that he would have still made the same mistakes, just on a much like larger scale,
well,
if he had more money?
Absolutely. It would still be around. It would definitely be around.
You don't think he would have made the same mistakes?
Well, I think the same mistakes would have been made, but sometimes you learn by your mistakes, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course. Most
so I
do.
Think if that's and if anybody's going to learn by his mistakes, yes, you can make the mistakes. If anybody's going to learn by it, Paul Heyman will.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not dealing with with an idiot there. I mean, really, I'm sincere about that. You know, as Paul was, he's a very sharp guy. But we all got to we. Everything, and again, here I go again, everything that he was doing and everything that we were doing was all breaking new ground.
Right.
And when you break new ground, believe me, you make some ruts that you should have never made. And sometimes that happens, and you have to back up and get out and go another direction. But you have to have money to do it, see? And before, in this day and age, and even in the day and age of ECW, when it was up there, it was a very, very expensive thing to be on television and try to make a bit of a national dent in the world of wrestling.
Right.
I got to ask you this question. It's really stupid and it's really petty, but I have to know
That's my perfect kind of question. I probably know the answer. If you promise to keep it stupid enough, I'll come up with a good stupid answer.
The ECW fire incident. Now,
yeah.
Now, Mick Foley had said in his book that you had told him to hit you again with the chair.
Mick Foley did everything.
Now,
no, I'll be honest with you. All right, so what are you going to ask me?
I was going to say, in your book, you had said that that's
pretty, that's wrong.
That's absolutely wrong. You would
have
said
that. If you was in an $18 million lawsuit,
yeah.
The damn attorney went ahead and asked you, said, well, what did you bring that chair in the ring and hit people with it? Why did you do something like that? Well, hell, I'd be looking for something like that, too.
I was going to say, did you talk to him about that and finally get it straight as to what happened?
Well, I don't know. We still got our difference. But you know what? Thank the Lord, and I really mean this, for taking care of myself and Paul and Mick Foley.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, it really what it runs down to, the whole thing, is that there's a guardrail around that entire thing. And if you come within the end of that thing, it's like going on the Indianapolis 500.
Right.
And if some guy's down there and burning and you jump over the guardrail and run down there and get burned in the process of putting out the fire. That's not a very good reason. I mean, they're not going to go ahead and you're not going to have a lawsuit says you shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Right.
And even though you did help somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what it was.
Right.
You know.
Okay, that's good.
Terry, you brought up earlier as far as having a hard time.
And that, it was an $18 million lawsuit. Either, right?
Yeah.
I tend to exaggerate. Well, damn, I'm from Texas. So I gotta
everything's
hey, I'm from Kinky, Texas, too. I got that same
Kinky
problem.
Friedman can exaggerate and run for governor. I can. I can, too. And I'm not even kinky.
Tell
maybe
me about,
a little bit.
Tell me about the Insane Clown Posse and your relationship with them. A little preview from the book.
Just love the guys. You know, I really do. But at the start, I didn't love them because they made this goofy, I can't remember what the name it was, but it was this tape. And it was years ago when it was me and Abdullah in Japan. And they did the commentary on it and said, oh, look at that, you know, there's old drunk Terry Funk and I don't know, Abdullah, the whatever they is calling him, and made a mockery of it and went on, you know, not really a mockery, but just made fun of it, made a spoof out of it because
right.
they were doing it. And it, I think that they thought it was going to be good because they used Abdullah and I in a tape, you know, and thought, well, we'd really think that was great. Well, I didn't think it was too damn great, you know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
but anyhow, so I'd send word to them all the time, you know. Anytime somebody said the Insane Clown Posse, I'd say, damn, you tell those guys, you know, around the wrestling business, I said, you tell those guys if I ever find them, I'm going to kick the crap out of them. Did, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't really that mad, but just wanted them to know that I wasn't pleased with the damn thing.
Right.
And so they eventually, you know, as I met them, and how I met them was through Sabu. Sabu said, hey, he called me up and said, hey, these guys are good guys. And he is down in Corpus Christi. He said, they want to drive up there and see you. I said, well, bring them up. So they brought them up, and in came Shaggy 2 Dope and Violent J, you know, and they drove up here in their bus and got up here, and my wife just happened to have a bunch of chili cooking that day and cooked up, you know, it wasn't cooking for them, but just had a big pot on the stove there, and gosh, they came in here and ate the chili, and I met with them and met some of the sharpest business guys that I've ever met in my life. These guys are really sharp guys when it comes to business.
Wouldn't think that just looking at them.
Well, you really wouldn't. You know, you think that they're little goofy and crazy, and they are, but damn, they're good businessmen, and I really mean that. And it's not because of what they did, you know. And anyhow, as I finished talking to them, and they finished eating, and they had this bus that was, hell, a bus probably a $250,000 touring bus or something that was theirs that they travel in. Come driving up here, and hell, I thought they'd be coming up here in a broken down, you know, a broken down station wagon or something, you know, with a couple of insane clowns, you know, like those little clown deals, you know.
Right.
One of those little bitty cars where seven clowns jump out. I had, you know, nine clowns jump out of a Volkswagen.
Right.
But that wasn't the way it was. And anyhow, they came in and just really hit it off with them. But anyhow, they went ahead and left, and they said they wanted to give me some money for that. And I said, nah, don't do it. And anyhow, they left some money in on the table and left, and I couldn't wait for them to leave because I was going to run around the corner and find out what it was, you know. And went around there, and they had several thousand dollars they left for me, which was
wow.
quite a deal, you know. And it very much appreciated, you know, but that really made me friendly with them since I talked nice about them.
You can be friendly with anybody that'll give you the money.
Yeah.
Terry, I got one last question for you, Doc, you can close it up. But,
sure.
Terry, one thing that you mentioned earlier that kind of got me thinking, I guess, was that how you said you have a hard time watching yourself, and I was wondering what you attribute that to. I mean, do you feel like you're getting to the point now where you don't really belong, or do you still understand that you still have a place out there in the wrestling ring and the fans still want to see you there?
Well, it's very much like Dusty Rhodes. Yeah, I think I still do a pretty damn good job in a ring.
I would agree.
I still think that I bust my ass for the people, you know, but But I also still think that whenever I climb up on the top rope, like Dusty Rhodes, you know, he says, one time he told me, he says, I'm going to climb up on the top rope, and he says, I was going to fly on the top rope. You know, I'm going to catch you with a body press. You know, well, he climbed up on the top rope, stumbled twice, and fell off the top rope and into my chest, and we hit the match, you know, boy, did I ever fly tonight. Did you see that? That's what it is, really, you know. I mean, I don't want to see how I, you know, I mean, really, it sounds funny, but I don't like to watch myself like I used to. I mean, maybe I'm not, I don't want to know it. I don't want to know if I'm not flying off the top rope.
Right.
If I'm falling off. You know, at least till the end of these bookings, then I'll look at the tape, you know, You know, you guys are going to sit here and say I'm full of crap again, but I have every intention of being out of it by the first of the year.
Wow.
Now, I'll tell you what, I've got one date after, Jesus, here I go again. You know, I got one date.
Well, it's another show.
I got
you
one
can do
date.
That
I got one date, you know, and after December. I got one date for Tony Hunter, but that's about it. You know?
Go on and throw out the date, Terry. We know you want.
Well, I don't know. I don't.
Oh, okay. You don't know it.
I don't. Well, hell, because I got Alzheimer's, I can't remember.
So
I can't decide whether it's Alzheimer's or old timers.
Yeah,
I got old timers and Alzheimer's.
Still have your wit about you, though, so that hasn't been lost.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder.
Yeah, I hear you.
So you're going to retire?
It doesn't take it. You say I've got my wit about me, and I've got a damn idiotic booking schedule like that? I don't know if I have my wit about me or not.
So we heard it here first. You're going to retire at the end of the year? Is that what you're saying?
Well, then I said, yeah, but I could have.
I got another date after. Right,
so I can't say that.
I can't really say it.
Okay.
You know, just,
but damn it, after that.
That was my world. I want to tell you something. You guys had Terry Funk's world's shortest retirement there.
Yeah.
It's about 40 seconds long.
We're doing count.
See, we're retired. Oh, wait.
I was
no,
retired, and now I'm already started back up again.
Right.
I tried to give you a great announcement. Well, that's all right. Announce my return to wrestling.
Terry, I want to thank you for being on the show.
Gosh, I had a great time on it. Appreciate you guys having me.
No problem. The book is called More Than Hardcore by Terry Funk. You got to check it out. You can get it at High Spots. You can get it at all the book outlets that you shop at.
And you can also get an autograph from me, truthfully, if you, just write Terry Funk, Box 118, Canyon, Texas.
All right.
And it's that simple, it'll get there. And dadgummit, just send, you know, but I mean.
You have to send the book to you.
I got to tell you what the price is. $25 plus $5 handling. That's it.
Okay.
And I'll write you a letter along with it.
Awesome. All right. You guys heard it here.
All right.
All right, Terry. Thanks for being on. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it, Terry.
Okay. All
thanks,
right,
man.
Bye, guys.
See ya.
Terry Funk, the king of hardcore.
I love Terry Funk, man. That guy's awesome.
He is. All right, we're running out of time, man.
Yeah.
I knew we were going to cut it short.
Yeah.
I knew we were going to cut it close, actually.
You know what? It's great. I've went the entire hour without even thinking about plugging voiceofwrestling.com or totalwrestling.net or, you know, anything like that. So.
Anything like that. That was pretty good. You almost made it, though.
I still have. Come on, man. You know what? I will do real quickly, though. I mean, and since I saved your butt, because you couldn't have done it by yourself. I guess. I think you could have. But nevertheless, you didn't want to, so you call me up saying, oh, man, I need help. So I come on and save the day. I think that I could throw out. WrestlingRadioNetwork.com is really going to be a pretty cool deal, man. We got a few great shows. My, you know, Voice of Wrestling will be on there, obviously. It's a network of radio shows that I feel are some of the best out there. We just need Wrestling Weekly on there, and we'll be all set. But Get in the Ring is making their return to the Wrestling Radio Network coming up next week. Not tomorrow week, but a week from Tuesday, I believe. Well, it's actually going to be Wednesday is when they're going to come on. But they're going to be live, Get in the Ring live for the first time since they went off radio, actual radio.
Wow.
So that's going to be a pretty neat thing. So I will plug that much. But
So when does Wrestling Radio Network start? That starts tomorrow, right?
No, that's going to start a week from tomorrow. We were going to start it tomorrow, but we're actually going to debut that. We're pushing it off one more week just to make sure everything's worked out. And then that will start up, and I really have, I don't want to jinx it, but I have a really controversial guest that I'm looking forward to, and his first name starts with an L, ends with an X, and his last name starts with an L, ends with an Uger.
Yes.
So just in case, I don't want to jinx it, so I'm not going to say who he is, but
okay.
I really have a, I hope that he comes through, I really expect him to, and so that'll be a really cool guest to have on, but that's all that's going on with me. So
sounds good.
I have dates coming up in November 2nd, I'm going to be in Philadelphia, I'm just joking. I do appreciate you letting me come on, man, it was an honor being on the show. And I really respect what you guys do here at Wrestling Weekly.
All right, thanks, Chris. You guys, you want to check out what Les is up to every week, check it out, lesthatcher.com and epwt.com. Want to thank Wrestle Talk Radio for their help this week, and also don't forget, it's obsessedwithwrestling.com for all your wrestling needs. We're going to be back with you for, next Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern. Good night from Wrestling Weekly. For Chris Cash, I'm Doc Young. See ya.
You've been listening to Wrestling Weekly. Please join us again next Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern right here on WrestlingWeekly.com.